Professor Zinn, as you know, after the invasion of Iraq, polls showed that up to 60% of the American people fully believed that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11 and believed that he was closely associated with Al-Qaeda. Even after President Bush, when he was finally put in a corner, admitted there was no connection, polls showed that still 30% of American people believe that. Now, American people aren't stupid. My opinion, and this is a question to you, is the American corporate media at fault here?
Well, there's no question that you're right. No, I agree with you. The American people are not stupid, but they can be misinformed. And they have been misinformed consistently by the corporate media. Fox Television, CNN, the major newspapers, the major television stations, and the Washington Post, which is a major newspaper, it's supposed to be liberal, admitted some time ago that it had given the American people false information about weapons of mass destruction, that it had gone along and simply conveyed the administration's misinformation about that to the American public. So, no, I agree with you very much. The reason so much of the American public still believes facts which have turned out to be false is because they have had a very bad education by the media. They certainly have had a very bad education in the history of this country, and certainly a bad education about what is going on in the world. We need to look for alternative media. I applaud programs like this, which give us viewpoints that you will not get on NBC or CBS. I applaud Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! And David Bastamian's Alternative Radio and Pacifica, and all those attempts to bring information to the public which it does not get from the corporate media.
We have one last call. Camdenton, Missouri, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. So according to you, in the last 60 years or so, there's a vast conspiracy among all of the our legislature, our government, that we're going to do everything wrong, and we're going to do everything we can to diminish the United States in everything we do. We don't have a government in Vietnam. We don't have a government in Germany, etc. We help these people, and George Bush, in the last 4 years, has not ruined education and health care and whatever. There is no vast conspiracy to ruin the United States. Are you a communist?
There are two questions there. The second one. No, I'm not communist. I remember the Communist Party and so on. I thought that was a question that left us a long time ago. I believe in a kind of socialism. I believe in democratic socialism. And I believe that resources of society should be more equally distributed among people. Everybody's entitled to certain basic things. And, you know, you can call that whatever you like, but I think that would be a good society. I believe in a peaceful world. I don't believe in war. The American people are not stupid, but they can be misinformed. And they have been misinformed consistently by the corporate media. The American people are not stupid, but they can be misinformed. And they have been misinformed consistently by the corporate media.
Hello and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and today's program is made possible by Comcast of Sacramento and the First Amendment of the Constitution of these United States. Today's program includes from Bill Moyer's Journal of May 1st, 2009, U.S. Torture and Consequences. Bill Moyer sits down with Bruce Fine, former Deputy Attorney General under President Ronald Reagan and Chairman of American Freedom Agenda. And he also has Mark Danner, who has been reporting on the U.S. treatment and interrogation of detainees for the New York Review of Books. Also on the program, the Journal profiles Steve Meekum, a Massachusetts community organizer fighting to keep working people in their homes. And then, later on, from March 24th, 2009, Scott Horton interviews Juan Cole. Juan Cole, professor of history at the University of Michigan, discusses the humanitarian crisis caused by the U.S. invasion of Iraq and the misinformation at the heart of most anti-Islam rhetoric.
Welcome to the Journal. Enhanced interrogation, harsh questioning techniques, extraordinary rendition. Now we know what they were really talking about. Throwing a man against a wall 30 times in a row, depriving a prisoner of sleep for 11 straight days, waterboarding one detainee 183 times. In a word, torture. With President Obama's release 2 weeks ago of those memos from the Bush administration's Office of Legal Counsel and the imminent release of photos documenting further mistreatment, a national debate has erupted over what to do with the overwhelming evidence of human rights abuse. The president said this is a time for reflection, not retribution. But we wrestle with a powerful dilemma. Shall we move on, as Mr. Obama has suggested, or do we hold a congressional investigation, appoint an independent commission, or a special prosecutor, and put those responsible on trial? With me are two men who've been thinking and writing a lot about the morality and legality of our actions since 9/11. Bruce Fine has worked for three Republican presidents, including as the Associate Deputy Attorney General under Ronald Reagan. He was counsel to Congressman Dick Cheney when Cheney was the ranking House Republican on the committee investigating Iran-Contra. Nearly 2 years ago, he was here on the Journal calling for George Bush's impeachment.
He's claimed authority to say he can kidnap people, throw them into dungeons abroad, dump them out into Siberia without any political or legal accountability. These are standards that are totally anathema to a democratic society devoted to the rule of law.
Now in private life, Bruce Fine is chairman of the American Freedom Agenda, an organization advocating the restoration of constitutional checks and balances. He's also the author of this book, Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. As a reporter for 25 years, Mark Danner has covered everything from politics to war to human rights, with a special focus on American foreign policy. A longtime staff writer for The New Yorker, he's now a frequent contributor to the New York Review of Books. The Wall Street Journal says his recent publication of a secret Red Cross report on the treatment of prisoners was key to President Obama's decision to release the memos from the Office of Legal Counsel. Among his many books is this one, Torture and Truth. He has written new books that will come out this fall, Stripping Bare the Body, Politics, Violence, War, and Voices from the Black Sites. Welcome to the Journal. The president had a press conference on Wednesday night in which he was asked two questions about torture. If you'd been there, Mark, what would you have asked him?
I would have asked him to get out in front of the country this whole debate about torture, why it was done, whether it really protects the country, what we've lost and what we've gained. Because I think the losses have been very, very great. But until the country is convinced and understands how great the losses have been and parts with the notion that torture is necessary to protect us, we still are going to be having this continuing debate about torture as a necessity to protect the country, which I think is very harmful.
I would have asked him, since he's agreed that what was done was torture and that United States criminal code makes torture a crime, and there's no national security exception, no exception if you get useful information. And because we had impeached in the House Judiciary Committee a former president called Richard Nixon for failing faithfully to execute the laws, how he can justify not moving forward with an investigation when we have a former president and vice president openly acknowledging they authorized waterboarding, what he has described as torture, is a crime. Or, in the alternative, if he thinks that there are mitigating circumstances, and there's body language suggests that, then he should pardon them like Ford did Richard Nixon. And the reason why the difference between a pardon and non-prosecution is important is because the pardon requires the recipient to acknowledge guilt, that there was wrongdoing, there was a crime. Just forgetting and sweeping it under the rug suggests this wasn't illegal.
But he is clearly trying to move, as he says, beyond the past. He's closing Guantanamo. He doesn't countenance torture. He says it won't happen on his watch. I mean, shouldn't that settle the issue?
This is an issue that, as he has put it, divides the country. But because it divides the country, in my opinion, is one reason we have to confront it. The idea that this is about the past is simply wrong. It's not about the past. It's about our present politics. You have a political predicate being laid down by the former administration and by some Republicans now in office that essentially says because these techniques have been stopped, if and when there's a second attack, it will be the fault of the new administration, that President Obama, in deciding not to torture, has left the country vulnerable to another attack. That is present politics. That's not about the past. That's about now. And that's why this has to be confronted, not only legally, because I agree with that, but politically as well.
Mark, torture isn't a Republican or Democratic prohibition. We ratified the Convention Against Torture in the Senate. We passed it and made it a crime. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. Moreover, with regard to this idea of, well, as long as we got good information, then we can flout the law. That's not how you do it in the United States. I've been around for 41 years. If you think the law is deficient, then we should have repealed the torture statute. In fact, if it was so important to undertake waterboarding and torture, Cheney should be out there demanding that it be reinstituted, because he still agrees that we've got Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda out there wanting to plot and kill us.
He's out there demanding it be reinstituted.
He should be asking, repeal the statute.
You know, for all practical purposes, for all practical purposes, that is what Cheney is saying. Cheney is saying that the fact that we're not doing this now, he doesn't say waterboarding in particular, but he says the fact that we're not doing this now is leaving the country vulnerable. That is what he said.
Let me play for you what former Vice President Cheney actually said to Sean Hannity the other day. Take a look.
We had to collect good first-rate intelligence about what was going on so we could prepare and defend against it. And that's what we did. We, with the intelligence programs, the terror surveillance program, as well as the interrogation program, we set out to collect that kind of intelligence. It worked. It's been enormously valuable in terms of saving lives, preventing another mass casualty attack against the United States.
What's critical about that, I think, is not only that the former Vice President of the United States is saying it, it's that a lot of Americans believe it. You know, the torture discussion, I think, involves the law in the way you suggest. I think it involves prosecutions in the way you suggest. I have no problem with that. I agree with that. But the key question here is, if it's simply a legal matter, if it's a matter of recognizing the law was broken and prosecuting people, why wasn't this done in 2004? We have known about this for five long years now. How it happened, who approved it, more documents are coming out, but in fact, the basic narrative we've known since the summer of 2004, nothing was done because it's a political matter. The politics of this, until very recently, and arguably still, cut in the other direction, which is to say, a lot of people believe it, a lot of people think you have to be harsh with terrorists, a lot of people support, either vocally or quietly, what the vice president just said so vividly.
But this is the way
that's
I would
the political
respond.
Problem we
yes,
have to confront.
But you cannot separate the political from the legal, the constitutional.
Oh, I agree with that.
The president of the United States, the attorney general, when I was in office, I took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, meaning to enforce it. And there's a way out of that. You can issue pardons. You don't have a right to consult the political forces and say, I'll just ignore the law. And in fact, in 2004, we confronted the same problem we had with Nixon. He wasn't going to investigate Watergate and the obstruction of himself. That's why I had a special prosecutor and ultimately an independent counsel. That hasn't been done in this case, but now the president and the vice president who authorized this are gone. So there's no obstacle. If President Obama didn't want to be president and faithfully enforce the laws, he shouldn't be there.
You know,
he should issue a pardon. But I want to go to the more important issue. This is the whole idea of who we are as a country. If you think the law is handcuffing you, you change the law. The president can't say, heck, national security is too important, I just flout the law. That's what banana republics and tyranny
do. Can we follow the Watergate parallel just for a second? Because I think this makes my point. Watergate, as some of your viewers will remember and some won't,
high crimes and misdemeanors.
Involved not only high crimes and misdemeanors, involved Judge Sirica. That is, you had prosecutions going on. You also had the Watergate Select Committee, which was a television event. I remember it vividly. It showed the country what happened and why what happened was wrong. And in so doing, it laid the political groundwork for political change and for investigation, true investigation, so that the legal part of it didn't simply seem to be a witch hunt. That's what, to me, that's how torture has to be confronted on both sides.
All Obama has to do is ask for a joint committee or a torture committee, and it would happen tomorrow. We have to confront this issue, whether we're going to live by a rule of law, because this is the same issue arose, Bill, with regard to the electronic surveillance. Oh, the FISA statute's handcuffing us ability to gather intelligence. The heck with the law, we'll just go ahead and do it. No, in this country, if we want a republic to exist, you have to change the law. That's the difference between a civilized country and one that's arbitrary and capricious.
So what do you want Obama to do, Bruce?
If Obama thinks that these people, and he said, have committed torture, and he doesn't believe it should go forward for political reasons, he needs to pardon them.
Before they're convicted of anything?
Yes, that's what happened with President Nixon. Right. He wasn't accused of anything. He wasn't indicted. You can issue pardons before there's a formal accusation.
So therefore, you pardon him, and then what?
Then at least we do not have a situation where we've set a precedent that lies around like a weapon that you can violate the law with impunity. Then at least at that point, we can have a full investigation. There's no criminal culpability.
You would follow the pardon with an investigation?
Congressional investigation?
Yes, special prosecutor?
We need Congress to get back and do its work.
But they're compromised. four top members of Congress were briefed on this back in 2000.
Then they need to be exposed. The Congress shouldn't be covering up itself.
Yeah. The problem here is the entire top of the government is implicated in this. It's not just the Bush administration. Congress was briefed, and it's one of the reasons why Democrats in Congress, some Democrats, are not enthusiastic about a commission. So if you define it narrowly in a legal way, to me, that's a dead end. I support prosecutions, but I believe there needs to be a full investigation that will not only tell us in minute terms what was done, we already know a lot about this, but that will educate the country not only about what was done, but what was lost
by
and why
Congress,
this is important.
An investigation by Congress, as you say, compromised, or by an independent commission that's not accountable to Congress or the White House?
I would favor myself an independent commission along the lines of 9/11. There are downsides to that. There's no question about it. It would take time. You need to have, obviously, the highest security clearances. They need to look at all information. But they need, above all, to be credible and authoritative. You need to be able to speak to the country and say this was a disaster, and this is why. And, you know, there's one other point to be made about the relationship between politics and the law. At the end of the day, it's the politicians who make the law. Lawyers may not want to recognize that, but in 2006, this is very late, 2006, a few years ago, we already knew about Abu Ghraib, we already knew about torture. Congress passed a law called the Military Commissions Act, that part of which shielded those interrogators who took part in this stuff from prosecution under the War Crimes Act. Now, this was passed in full view of the public by Congress. The Democrats could have filibustered it. They didn't. Why? Because they knew it would be a political risk and they would be accused of, quote, coddling terrorists.
The other day, Karl Rove was on Fox News saying you don't want any administration to criminalize policies of the previous administration. Take a look.
We're going to turn ourselves into the moral equivalent of a Latin American country run by colonels in mirrored sunglasses. And what we're going to do is prosecute systematically the previous administration or threaten prosecutions against the previous administration based on policy differences. Is that what we've come to in this country?
That is nonsense on stilts. Torture is not a political issue. Torture is something prohibited under a treaty by the U.S. Senate. It was prohibited in the U.S. Criminal Code, a bill passed by the House and Senate, including Republicans. And this idea that this would be like banana republics, no. We have due process. No one gets convicted without proof beyond a reasonable doubt, right to counsel, opportunity to cross-examine all adverse witnesses, make all the arguments, reasonable reliance on the law, which is a defense. So this idea of saying that we have a criminal enforcement system that's a banana republic shows his ignorance of how our system works as opposed to how banana republics work.
I spent the weekend reading the documents that you published in the New York Review of Books from the Red Cross Report. And then I spent the rest of the weekend reading the four memos that have been released by the government recently. And I want to ask you this. I mean, they turn the stomach. But is there anything new in them?
I mean, what I think is distinct about the Red Cross Report is that it describes in minute detail from the detainees themselves the kind of torture that they were subjected to in great detail. You know, it's easy to talk about waterboarding and say it only takes 30 seconds. It's very easy. It's very effective. It's not cruel because it breaks people very quickly. You heard this particularly on Fox News, but elsewhere for years now. In fact, we find out a couple of things. We find out that it's extremely violent, that it causes extensive vomiting and physical reactions. And those descriptions are very vivid in the Red Cross report. We find out from the legal documents you're talking about that this was not done once to Abu Zubaydah. This was done 83 times. This was done 183 times to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in a month. So we're talking about six times a day.
These documents that have been released spell out, lawyers spelling out specific water temperatures to be used when hosing detainees. The length of time detainees could be denied sleep or put in stress position. How the head and the neck needed to be supported by a towel when they were knocking him against the wall. I mean, Mr. Lawyer, what's going on there? Why are lawyers doing this?
Okay, well, what you see is it's clear that they got marching orders. We need to do this to save the country. Give us
from
some kind
top.
Of legal cover.
You think
cover.
It came
We're
from the
trying
top?
To, of course it came from the top. I worked
we
in Office of Legal Counsel.
Though.
I worked in Office of Legal Counsel. Office of Legal Counsel never just out of the sun said, hey, why don't we write a memo saying you can do all these things to save the country? They obviously got a request over from the White House. And we don't even know whether they had already started these enhanced interrogation techniques and then thought after the fact, hey, let's get a legal cover, which is apparently what they did in the illegal surveillance. They started the violations of FICE and then said, now let's concoct some kind of theory that justifies this and why it looks so slipshod in terms of its rationale. But one of the recurring refrains in these memos is the cop-out of the advice. We assume that there will be physicians on the scene where if it becomes torture, they'll stop it. Well, how are they going to know? But that's it. Keep saying that we assume that if the pain or the mental suffering becomes prolonged, the physicians will say it's too much and you'll stop. But it also is what you're saying, very antiseptically written. Like, you know, it's like you could read in 1984.
If you read the Red Cross reports closely, as you spent your weekend doing, I'm sure it was a happy weekend. There were moments where, in fact, the physicians did stop certain things. One of the detainees who was subjected to forced standing, that is, his hands were manacled to the ceiling, and he was kept on one foot for days. One foot because one of his legs he had lost in fighting in Afghanistan. A doctor finally came in and measured with a tape measure the swelling of his leg, his remaining leg, and decided that this had to be stopped. During the waterboarding, they put a clip on one detainee's hand to monitor the oxygen content of his blood to make sure that they wouldn't kill him. This is the one who was waterboarded 183 times in a month. So you had this perverse, both legal side of this. You know, the Red Cross reports and the four memoranda that the Obama administration released are in a funny way the mirror sides of the same event. You have on the one hand the detainees talking about it, on the other hand the lawyers describing these things. And it makes haunting. You know, I'd encourage viewers to just read these because it's extraordinary.
We will link viewers to our website. But I want to ask you this. You were talking about how these documents got written. Yeah. The columnist David Broder wrote this weekend that these memos, and I'm quoting, represented a deliberate and internally well-debated policy decision made in proper places. What's your take on that? He is saying these were done under the right procedure, in the right way, by the right people.
First of all, he's, in a sense, the voice of the Washington establishment. He is telling you, look, this happened within the government. It happened according to channels, etc. It's important for a second reason, I think, which is that this stuff was debated at a high level of government. It was talked about, and there's evidence that as this interrogation was going on, that's described in minute terms in the Red Cross report, as the waterboarding was happening, the sleep deprivation, the forced standing, there was daily, as really hourly contact between those rooms in Afghanistan, Thailand, and elsewhere in the black sites, daily contact between them and Langley, Virginia. All of these things had to be approved at the acting director level of the CIA, and daily contact between the CIA and the principals committee in the White House. George Tenet came over and briefed, then the director of the CIA, and briefed the principals almost on a daily basis on these interrogations. So, you know, they were informed in real time what was going on, which goes back to the question about prosecutions. You know, again, I don't oppose prosecutions. I think they should come, perhaps not immediately, but they should definitely come. But the question is also, where do you start? If the president approved it, the vice president approved it, the principals committee, including the vice president and the attorney general, by the way, were briefed on it every day. You have the interrogators doing it. You have this top level of the CIA approving it in writing. You have the Justice Department approving it extensively, minutely in writing, right down to the level of techniques and whether you can put insects in the black box in which you're stuffing a detainee. You have, from the bottommost level of the interrogators all the way to the president, involvement of the entire U.S.
All right, but let me ask Bruce, who served in the Justice Department, only one of the three of us who did. It is 2 or 3 days after 9/11. The president has said to John Ashcroft, the attorney general, John, don't let this happen again. And everybody says we're in a pressure cooker. The CIA is frantically trying to find out if there are going to be more attacks. And everybody said we've got to find out if they're going to attack us again. And the detainees we have here are the ones who can tell us. If anybody knows about the next plot, it's them. What would you have done?
Well, there are two things that I would advise the press. Number one, we can get any law repealed, revoked, changed to authorize what you think needs to be done. Congress did that with regard to the authorization to use military force, so you change the law if you think there are restrictions. Go to Congress, and you could do this in secret session. And Congress would have done anything. They would have passed a law saying the world is flat after 9/11 if the president asked for it. The second thing is, even if you thought that there was no time whatsoever, you'd say, Mr. President, if we do it as soon as we've done, we need to go to Congress and ask for ratification after the fact. They've got to ratify what we're doing is legal. We can't just throw the Constitution and shred it like we're now at national security then. It trumps the Constitution of the United States. So there are ways in which you can approach this kind of crisis. Even defying the law, as long as you make certain that you're going to go back, have political ratification, you can explain what you've done without disclosing sources and methods. And if you have to expose sources and methods in order to have legitimacy, that's what a republic requires. That's how you can do
more from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.